This is side two of interview number six with Saul Weisberg on July 18, 1985. Okay, Saul, you were just talking about Jewish education, problems with it nationally as well as here in Pittsburgh.
By the way, just as an aside, I don't know what Elmer's affiliations are, but I know that Sylvia and Sydney are very active at the Rod of Shalom. And do you know that the Rod of Shalom, 100 years ago, I guess it is today, had its own day, had day schools?
No, I did not know that.
They had a day school. Very interesting. You might ask Walter sometime about that. Lasted for, I think, maybe 15 years. A full-fledged day school. I won't go off onto it. I was just trying to think through why came to an end, but I guess the public school system began to get stronger and the Jews began to get assimilated more, and so I guess but there was a time early in the history of Rod of Shalom when they established a full-fledged day school. When the influx of particularly Eastern European Jews came into this country starting in, they didn't exactly start exactly, but in large numbers starting in the 1880s. When that influx took place, one of the big concerns, of course, was Americanization of the Jewish immigrant. But as the years went by, another major concern, of course, was how to maintain the Jewishness of the immigrant, and particularly the children of the immigrant. The immigrant himself didn't need particularly Jewish education. He had certainly had at least Heder or Torah. Common Torah in his hometown and so forth, but the children had no access really in this country to formal Jewish education unless there was some sort of private instructions or unless synagogues were to establish schools. And some of the synagogues did establish some schools, but not too effectively, and there were quite a few synagogues, and not all of them were very large and so forth. So in the early 1900s, Jewish education in Pittsburgh and elsewhere, for that matter, was always a matter of real concern. Perhaps the principal organizer in the early 1900s of Jewish communal institutions was a man named Rabbi Shinsky, whose name may or may not mean anything to you.
Do you know a first name for him, Saul?
Gee, it's funny. The rabbi.
Okay.
All right. Fun. No, better not guess. It's easy enough for me to find out. But anyway. He, by the way, was the prime organizer for the Jewish Home and Hospital for the Aged. And one of his big ambitions was to develop a central Jewish communal educational institution. And he, along with some others, someone by the name of Aaron, who was Aaron, I guess it was, managed finally to raise money for the creation of the Hebrew Institute. And back in, I think, 1916, it was either 1916 or 1918, I think it was 1916, the Hebrew Institute, as a central communal Jewish educational facility, but after school, but for students after public school, the Hebrew Institute became a reality. And a gentleman by the name of Saul of Israel Abrams came to Pittsburgh from Baltimore to head the institute professionally. And during the 20s and the 30s, the Hebrew Institute really was a very effective, at least had a lot of students and good relationships with synagogues, and even had responsibilities for supervising programs in synagogues, which are again beginning to do now, it seems.
Where were they located, Saul?
Originally, they were located in the Hill District.
Mm-hmm.
They moved, just as an aside, to Squirrel Hill in the early 1950s. But they started out in the Hill District, which, of course, you would expect. That's where all the Jewish communal institutions started, the Home for the Aged and Montefiore Hospital and so forth. In the 40s, the Institute began to lose some of its credibility and some of its acceptability to synagogues and so forth. And by the late 40s, there was a strong feeling in the community that the Jewish education was not being effectively delivered. One of the persons who had a very strong conviction about this was Dr. Taylor, who was then executive, of course, of the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies and the United Jewish Fund. Interestingly enough, the Hebrew Institute was, I think, the only local beneficiary of the United Jewish Fund when the United Jewish Fund was organized in 1936. You remember when we talked about this at the very beginning that we had the two organizations, Federation of Jewish Philanthropies, to handle local, and the United Jewish Fund to handle fundraising for overseas. But the Hebrew Institute was an exception, and it began to receive funds from the community through the United Jewish Fund from the time that the fund was organized back in 1936.
Isn't that interesting that this was where it entered rather than the Federation of Jewish Philanthropy?
Yes, so...
Does that indicate something on the attitude of the people from the Federation of Jewish Philanthropy?
Yeah, the Federation of Jewish Philanthropy said, well, they were, you're right, that they were not interested, certainly, in Jewish education for the immigrant, let's put it that way. That was not, seemed to be their cup of tea. It was the Eastern European Zionist-oriented group who were interested, I think, in the... Hebrew Institute and in that kind of Jewish education. The people that you're talking about were probably satisfied with whatever Rhoda Sholem and so forth was already doing and weren't going to be concerning themselves about the others. Anyway, I don't know who proposed the idea originally, but very likely Taylor. It was proposed that a citywide study be undertaken of Jewish education, delivery of Jewish education in Pittsburgh. And Jacob Davis, by the way, became chairman of the study. I think he had already been president of the United Jewish Fund, if I remember rightly. And Aaron Kessler, who was then employed by the American Association for Jewish Education, which is a national consulting and service organization in the field of Jewish education, Aaron was brought in to be the professional consultant.
To the study.
To the study.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very broad study. It had maybe, it was a self-study, maybe had 200 or 300 members of a wide variety of committees. And it issued a very large and elaborate report, highly regarded report at the time, I might add. And the principal recommendations called for establishment of a Council of Jewish Education, of which the executive would then be a consultant and coordinator of Jewish education in the community. You know, I'm faltering here for a moment. And it also, what does this recommendation connect with secondary education at the moment? I'm faltering on that. Just let me forego that for a moment and say that the recommendation was for because the Hebrew Institute at that time already had a secondary education. Now it recommended some the development of secondary education programming. I'll have to check myself on that just out of curiosity. But the principal recommendation was for the development of a Council of Jewish Education to promote the coordination and consultation among the various Jewish educational institutions. Remember that I was not involved in this. This was in 1950, and I was not part of the planning process whatsoever, although I remember it, but not too well. Aaron Kessler was then employed to, in the course of the implementation of study, he was employed to be the director of a Council of Jewish Education. And, no, I'll go back and start over again on that. To say that he was employed just to be director of the Council of Jewish Education. He also, however, established what was called the School of Advanced Jewish Studies. It's interesting, I'm having trouble with this. It shows how long it's been since I've had to think about it.
So you were not as involved in it as the other?
No, I wasn't involved. I'm used to know all this, I can assure you. I've written papers and so forth. For some reason or other, I'm faltering on this particular item. Anyway, he also, in addition to being employed as the executive of the Council of Jewish Education, established the School of Advanced Jewish Studies and made himself the director. From the moment, my assumption is, this is an assumption on my part, my assumption is that from the moment that the study itself took place, that Israel Abrams, who was then head of the Hebrew Institute, probably found himself in opposition to it. But I may be wrong on that. I may be unfair to Israel. But one thing is clear, that the moment that Aaron Kessler came to Pittsburgh to be director of the Council of Jewish Education and to head up a new School of Advanced Jewish Studies, that Israel Abrams and Aaron Kessler became bitter antagonists. And I use the words very advisedly. School of Advanced Jewish Studies is a secondary program, as you know, for it's called post-bar mitzvah, that's the easiest way to put it. The Hebrew Institute already had a Lewis Aaron's high school for post-bar mitzvah students. There was a feeling already at that time that the Hebrew Institute's educational standards were not what they should be. There was a lot of feeling that the high school itself was not a very substantial program. So that the School of Advanced Jewish Studies and the Hebrew Institute Lewis Aaron's High School came directly into competition with one another. I won't go into detail talking about Aaron Kessler as a person. There are lots of places where it is on the record. But Aaron is well known as being a very difficult person and likes to state it, as a matter of fact, on his own. And he was certainly not an appropriate person to be a coordinator whose influence, so to speak, would rest upon his ability to persuade others or to develop good relationships with others. So that as time went on, the Council of Jewish Education withered and did not survive. I don't know how many years it took. It took quite a few, but eventually it disappeared. It was not an effective organization in terms of promoting coordination among the various educational institutions. Remember, not just on a secondary level, but on all levels. It was supposed to be of assistance to the various synagogues and so forth. And it did, by the way. When I say it, I mean the people who were involved, that's Aaron and Eunice, did develop a very close relationship with the educators at Beth Sholem, where Eunice happened to be. So I guess I'll take it back. Aaron developed a close relationship with Eunice Barragan back in the days when Eunice was at Beth Sholem. Eventually Eunice, of course, went over to school. Anyway, I'm not doing this with clarity, I think. The council disappeared, but the School of Advanced Jewish Studies remained. And the School of Advanced Jewish Studies, from 1950 on into 1960, was a direct competitor with and a bitter antagonist to the High School of the Hebrew Institute. And this was just a part of the general antagonism between the Hebrew Institute and the School for Advanced Jewish Studies. And there, I'm now talking about the lay people. There was very strong feelings between some of the lay people on the Hebrew Institute board and some of the people on the board of the school. A large part of that antagonism really resided or derived from the feelings that the lay people had toward the professionals involved. In other words, members of the board of the Institute would have strong feelings about Kessler, and members of the board of the School of Advanced Jewish Studies would have strong feelings about Abrams and their capabilities and so forth. And quite a few attempts were made in that decade of the 50s to 60s to see if something could be done about eliminating the competition and the duplication, because what was happening was that the Federation was funding the Hebrew Institute and was also funding the School of Advanced Jewish Studies. In funding these two organizations, they were obviously funding duplicating programs. Finally, it was agreed within the Federation that a new attempt should be made to bring about a merger, and I once again was involved. It was decided to take a look to see whether we could evaluate the secondary programs, at least. We brought in Isaac Tobin. Instead of doing a self-study, we brought in Isaac Tobin to be the consultant to the study committee. I don't know if you remember him at all, Sylvia.
What was he affiliated with?
He was, well, no, I'll tell you why. I might just possibly remember. He was the executive of the American Association for Jewish Education.
Where Aaron Kessler had originally come from.
But they knew each other. They weren't particularly friendly. They knew each other. I knew Isaac. He was quite a brilliant guy. He had been a former rabbi, an excellent speaker, and had come to Pittsburgh once. I don't know whether it was before or after the study, probably after the study, to make a speech to the women's division, in which he called me insulted the women's division. I'll never forget that. No, I knew Isaac quite well. I never quite understood what got into him that particular morning. But he was really a very good speaker. When I say insulted, he complained about the length of the programming before he got on to his speech.
Oh, we've had other speakers do that too.
Not publicly usually though.
Mr. Aaron's did it a couple years ago.
Did he?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't remember that.
Unfortunately.
Anyway. Isaac normally did not do consulting, but as I said, I knew him quite well. He was really a pretty good friend, and I went up to New York and persuaded him to do this various grounds, believing that the only way that we could bring about some change in the structure was to have the influence of an outside mediator. I did not feel at that time that a self-study would be useful, because I thought that all it would do would be to lay on the table the grievances that both parties had, and that this would just exacerbate the situation. It reminds me of the fact that several sessions ago I was searching for the word that had to do with this business of people getting together and exposing their feelings and so forth. The word I was looking for, by the way, was encounter. I'm not a great believer, or wasn't anyway, a great believer in the encounter misspeak that took over in the, I guess it was the early 70s after the assassination and so forth. But anyway, I don't know whether the encounter groups are still going strong or not. So we had the study. Isaac proved to be very skillful, and the recommendation finally was made that there should be a consolidation, as we called it, of the two secondary institutions. This meant that the Hebrew Institute had to give up its high school. And it meant that Aaron would be taking over secondary education in the Jewish community. This was very, very difficult for the Hebrew Institute to swallow. And there were some people who really absolutely refused to accept it. To this day, I think Elliot Finkel thinks it was a mistake for the Hebrew Institute board to finally agree to the consolidation, which the board did. But somehow or other, and it was sort of miraculous, as Aaron said, just because it's so unlike Aaron to say this sort of thing. I'll tell you that he called me a miracle worker at the time, because he thought that that I did have some, had a lot to do with bringing about what I guess a lot of people seemed really quite impossible at the time. But it was accomplished. One of the stumbling blocks was what to do about the name. Hebrew Institute didn't want to give up its name, and the School of Advanced Jewish Studies didn't want to give up its name. But finally we came up with a new name of the College of Jewish Studies, and you'll have to forgive me, Eleanor. I really am. I'll tell you in a moment why I think I'm having problems today. It's personal, but I'll tell you anyway. The secondary program that Kester was running was called the College of Jewish Studies. The Hebrew Institute had its own high school, the Lewis Aarons High School. When it came to the question of the name, Kester had a lot of trouble giving up the name college, because he had always insisted, that this was a very advanced program and so forth. Hebrew Institute didn't want to give up its name. But finally, Kester, it was his proposal, Kester proposed that he would give up the word college and use the name School of Advanced Jewish Studies. And that, he felt, was a concession on his part, and that, therefore, the Hebrew Institute should make the concession of giving up its part. And so the result was that we came out with a new consolidated secondary education program, which is now in existence, has been for 10 years, and on the whole, I think has been a pretty effective program. A little worried about the number of students, but that's a different thing. But it was a very progressive step forward. After the consolidation took place on the secondary level, the big issue then, well, there were two big issues on the table, really. One had to do with the Hebrew Institute. The other had to do with the day schools, which I'll come back to in a couple minutes. As far as the Hebrew Institute was concerned, there were a lot of people, and frankly, I was one of them, who felt that the standards of the Hebrew Institute, as we got into the 70s, those standards were poor, and that changes ought to be brought about inside the Institute to increase the standards. On top of that, as Sylvia at least knows very well, there was a great deal of feeling on the part of conservative synagogues about the Hebrew Institute. I mean, there was a feeling that the Hebrew Institute was competitive to conservative synagogue schools and conducted bar mitzvahs and so forth. So the Hebrew Institute was really a sore point within the Federation for the whole decade of the 70s on into the 80s. And we kept making all sorts of efforts to bring about changes inside the Hebrew Institute, including attempts to get Saul to retire and to be replaced by someone else, proposing consolidation of the Hebrew Institute with its elementary program and the School of Advanced Jewish Studies at the secondary level, so that we would have a single communal institution and so forth. But despite all the efforts we made, we were unsuccessful. The most crucial discussions revolved really around the issue of the retirements of Aaron Kester and Saul. Neither one would retire without the other. If we could have brought about the retirement of both of them at the same time, it was felt that we could bring in a single person, probably, and this would lead indeed to a merger or consolidation of the two organizations, which we felt would be useful in many ways, but we could not get them. Actually, the person who resisted retirement, by the way, was Saul. I don't mind putting that on the record. Saul consistently resisted retirement. It was not Aaron. Aaron, quite a few years ago, agreed to retire, but he did say that he would not retire as long as Saul Abrams continued to function as executive of the Hebrew Institute. But that's all past now. Aaron, of course, is retired. Saul is now director emeritus. There is a new individual and so forth. The day schools, I'll talk about briefly because I guess we are running out of time, came to Pittsburgh early, in a way. The first day school in Pittsburgh was Yeshiva Hitzimim. You got that, Eleanor? Okay. Who came to Pittsburgh, I think it was 1943. Rabbi Posner has been here since 1943. He was sent here by the Lubavitcher Rebbe to establish a day school, which he did. First class had six students. Not too long thereafter, Hillel Academy was established by Adolf Schoenbrunn and some others. Neither of these institutions conducted the best housekeeping. One of them had a building on Ellsworth Avenue in a relatively elegant neighborhood, and a lot of the Jewish individuals in town were highly incensed at the housekeeping and so forth, and for some reason perhaps. The issue of Federation support of day schools was raised quite early. Various members of the community, particularly some from the Reform, had very strong feelings against such support, arguing that the day schools were nothing more than parochial schools, completely in conflict with public education, the concept of public education. And that under no circumstances should the Federation support them. And it took many years before Federation finally developed a scholarship formula which was acceptable to enough people on the Federation board to have the Federation pass it as an allocation. Notion being that money was going directly to students rather than to school. And in this way,